Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. This is an ongoing series about the transformation that's happening in the world, specifically with the change in energy. And I'm so happy to have on the radio show a good friend who's written an amazing new book, Sergio Magaña. He's written two previous books, but this latest one is called Caves of Power, Ancient Energy Techniques for Healing, Rejuvenation, and Manifestation. Sergio, good to talk to you once again.
Hello, Alan, and I am also very honored to be again with you in New Realities and with all your other people that follows you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, your work is really important this time because you link certain time periods, certain frames of history, and as you say in your books, we're returning back to a time of spirit, back to the time of the Nahual, from the material world. And talk about this link back to in time to these other worlds that we are now connected to. Can you talk about this tradition?
Of course. I think nowadays when everything looks like upside down, yeah, we have to understand a little bit of the cosmic cycles. The ancient Mexicans, actually Mayans, Toltecs, Aztecs, were like, and the cultures before were specialized like in mapping the cycles of the cosmos and how they affected humankind. And of course, there is a long count that is called like the for the ancient ones was called the long count. Nowadays, people know it as the precession of equinoxes. That is a count of 26,500 years. And for the ancient Mexicans, the main number was in which everything had, all the cycles happened, was the number four, because they saw that there were four elements or four main moments of the day: sun rising, midday, sunset, midnight, or four phases of the moon. And like that, they split the long count into four, and that gives you periods of 6,600, a little bit more of years. And
right,
those periods were named suns. And now we're in a very special transition from what was the fifth sun that was ruling these past 6,000 years to the sixth sun. And they alternate exactly like the cycles in nature, like night and day. So the cycle of the fifth sun that is now ending was a sun of the tonal, that means that like it's like a metaphor that when we're like the collective follows like a tendency, like when we are awake, that we have open eyes and we see everything outside from God, so that those stands are very good for religions. Medicine is outside, satisfaction, you need to conquer countries, planets, and that. And now we're to the transition in which it's like a son of the Nahual, that is the like the son of dreaming, in which you close your eyes. So when you close your eyes, you must see yourself. And then God goes back inside. Medicine goes back inside, satisfaction, everything. So we are in that major transition. And of course, it is said that in order that the new sun or the new period can appear, the other must be destroyed. So that's why I think we are seeing so many funny things that I know is not so funny to experience them, but many of the systems are like falling down from politics, from economics, from everything. I don't have to tell the people what is happening now all over the world. But we are in a transition, and many people will leave it with grace, and many people could leave it with a little bit more of suffering. But it's a choice, because there have been a lot of there is a lot of information, I think, to transit it in the best way.
Right. So how, I mean, we're seeing the beginning of a new world, but is everything going to change, the whole society, by 2021? Is it a completely different world then, or will we still recognize this world?
Of course, the transition in the Aztec count started in 1991 and finishes in 2021, when the Sixth Son will be completely like ruling for more than 6,000 of years.
Uh-huh.
Of course, now we're seeing a lot of changes in that, but I am talking about a long, long period of thousands of years. So it won't be like as dramatic that in 2021 everything will be different. A lot of things will change, but it's progressive. So many things have to happen a lot still, for example, so that we reawaken the power of healing ourselves, many belief systems to fall and that, but it won't be in the 2021. That mm-hmm. will be like a kind of a point of a start of the major change, but it will be progressive, so that people don't worry.
I see. So, but you know, you're also a sort of, do shamanic practices, but you're also sort of a historian, I think, of the ancient Mexican shamans. And when you're talking about the Sixth Son, can talk about which tribe, whose traditions are you following, and how many different, there's the Aztec, the Toltec. Talk about that different histories. Where does it go back to?
Yeah. The main calendars that remain and the counts that remain are like the Mayan count and the Aztec count. But that doesn't mean that they were Mayan or Aztec. The first version of these calendars came from the Mixtec and Zapotecs in Oaxaca. That's the first kind of calendar that was known. And both the others developed from these ones. They have very similar counts, because they are splitted like in groups of 13 days, and similar to the weeks, and then counts of 20 days, like similar to the months.
Right.
They have like the same structure.
Uh-huh.
But the two mains that remain are like the Aztec and the Mayan. The one that I'm following, because actually the Aztec calendar is not Aztec, okay? The Sunstone is Aztec, and it was carved in those times. But it's an inheritance that comes much before of all the Nahuatl is a language. So all the groups that spoke Nahuatl, that were from the Teotihuacan, Xochicalcas, Toltecs, and finally Aztecs. So that is the count that I am referring, the one that comes from the all the groups that spoke Nahuatl, that is still still they exist, and is more known like Aztec calendar.
Uh-huh. But you know, you're talking about a 26,000 year old cycle. There must have been great traditions, people watching the sky for a long, long time. How far back would you say the first calendar goes?
Well, officially it has like 3,000 of years. But, uh-huh. of course, there are like the chronicles of what happened. So, for example, the oral tradition says, the first son was a son of darkness, that it was named the son of the Jaguar, that is like 36,000 years ago. The great beings, that is like referring to giants, were in the earth, and they were honest, and that's why they disappeared. And they are giving like different stories of what happened in the different sons with metaphors. For example, one says that all the humans became turkeys. The turkey that's the third son. In the tradition means the ego. So I think that humans became egocentric, and then a rain of fire destroyed them. So they are living metaphors of what happened, but you only understand when you know the tradition, because these kind of metaphors like turkey or everything, oh, they became monkeys, that normally people think about the prehistoric men, but monkey is that they surrender to pleasures and that, and then the wind took everything. So they have, like, at least the story goes 30,000 years, five sons. So it will be, like, 31,000 years, more or less. But, of course, it has to come from before, but I would lie if I tell you where did it came from.
But somebody is keeping track of that. You met, I did meet Humbatsman once, the Mayan timekeeper, gatekeeper. So someone's keeping track of this for a couple of thousand years, though. They've been looking at the sky, right?
Yeah, of course. And, of course, to know how precise they change, and that, I think that these kind of observations are really, really old, much more than 30,000 years. But the official, like, kind of chronicle comes from the first sun to the fifth, and those are, like, 30,000 years. But I think it's a lot older, because if not, how are you going to know that the cycles repeat and that and how they affect the cosmos?
I was just going to ask you about the Mayan calendar, or what they call the Mayan calendar, and the end of the 2012 time, December 21st, that has come and gone. Was there any truth to that?
Yeah, it's the end of a king, of what they call king, that king is sun also. But their periods are of 5,000 something years, but the long count is split into five instead into four. So it's quite similar, but like the count goes like 5,000 and something years. So if you add that five times, gives you the same number of the precession of equinoxes. And that's the same count of the Western astrology, when they measure the eras, the Aquarius and Pisces era, and that each era is like 2,000 and something years. So if you put the 12 together, you will get like the similar number to 26,000. So it's something that was watched all over the world with different counts. The Western astrology is split into 12, and so the changes every 2,000 years, the Aztec one into four, and so the changes every 6,000 years, and the Mayan into five. Mm. But it's the same number. So to pretend, that's why I prefer to see similarities and not differences, because to say everyone, someone has the truth, no. Everyone, the Western astrology, saw the same number. The Mayans saw the same number, and I don't know why they split it into five, but they did. And now the Aztec Toltecs split it into four. But actually, all of them are right, because it's the same precession of equinoxes. And, of course, every end of those periods create changes.
Do you think it's because we all the similarities, because we have the same, they come from the same background, the same ancient source, or because we are all seeing the same cosmos, and people are arriving at the answers separately, or the understanding separately?
Of course, it's the same cosmos. But I truly, if every time that I study much more my tradition, the Mexican one, and I see others, for example, the Egyptian, I see Tibetan Buddhism, I see so many similarities all over that I think it's a common background that suddenly it spread around the world, and everyone developed it according to their own environment and that. But I truly believe that that's what I believe. Or probably, it was separate, but it would be, there are so many similarities that I think it was a common source.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But, okay, so I want to talk to you about something we haven't talked about so much, but this idea of dreams. You know, I think the Mexican tradition, the ancient Mexican tradition, right, it means the word Mexico, I think you told me, has something to do with dreams, and this whole idea of dreaming awake and sueña, We in this culture disregard dreams, and I think the idea of dreaming in your tradition is much more important. Can you talk about that significance of dreams and dreaming?
Of course, and I'm really happy because our last interview, okay, we had one today, but it was like years ago, and you still remember about Mexico, the world.
Of Mexico,
you have a good memory, Alan.
I don't forget like that. Yeah, tell us what Mexico means, the word Mexico.
It comes from three roots. One is Metzli, that means the moon, Xictli, the navel, and Co, place. So it's the place of the navel of the moon. That actually, the very famous statues that are in the top of the pyramids, of some pyramids, for example, in Chichen Itza, the Chakmol, and that were in many other, for example, in Tula, but the government took it, that were named Tezcatzoncatl. There are these statues that are like lying down, like making like the effort in their aft, and they have or a bowl in the navel or a mirror. One of the names of the obsidian mirror is moon. So actually it's like a kind of yoga posture to enter in lucid dreaming. So it was definitely a culture of dreamers. It was said that actually the official story of the Nahuatl speaking groups start in a group that is called Chichimeca. Chi means power. So you put Chichi is double power. And which were this Mecatl is lineage, the lineage of the double power. And the double power is sleep, is awake dreaming. So it is. It was a complete culture of dreamers. Actually, there is a Teotihuacan phrase that says, the one that doesn't remember or work with his dreams or her dreams is like a living death, because has no control of his waking or her waking state. And what does that mean? That in order to live anything, first you have to dream it. And nowadays, and that's why if you see in all the languages of the world, any language that you would like to choose, it is said, the house of my dreams, the girl of my dreams, my worst nightmare. So in the language, it's totally hidden that first you dream it, and then you leave it, not in the other way. If not, you would say the house in which I live, and then I dream. So in the ancient times, they knew that for example, for me, it has happened many times that you dream someone, and then you meet that person, and then you would say the girl or the boss or the whoever of my dreams, because first it appears there.
Right. So you're saying even in this culture, there's some subconscious awareness that you have to dream something for it to make it happen, right?
Yeah. And actually, one of the main disciplines of the ancient Mexicans is the Nahuatl people speaking. That's why I say Mexicans, because there are many cultures. It's not accurate to say Toltecs were only one, but Toltecs, Aztecs, and that was one that is called Mexicatzin. That is a discipline that is done before falling asleep, in which you tell your Nahuatl or your energetic body that you use while dreaming, what do you want to dream? In order, because you know that there is an alphabet of archetypes, so it's called planting dreams. In order to plant the dream that you want to dream, it doesn't work every time that night. But actually nowadays, science knows that when we are falling asleep, we're crossing through this state that is called that was called hypnagogic, in which you are crossing through a hypnosis. So if in that moment, instead of thinking of how worried you are of the new government or whatever, you begin to planting, today I will dream with the serpent, and that serpent will heal my knee. Today I will dream with the turtle, and that turtle will give me abundance, and that will be much more beneficial.
What about, what do you dream with if you want to create something, if you want to manifest something? What animal is that? good for? What you
For example, healing, physical healing is a serpent.
What about projects? I have a project you want. Yeah.
You can use, for example, the flower, because, for example, for the ancient culture, flowers meant that something manifested with beauty and imperfection. So it could be a flower. The lizard is, for example, if you want something to be really like to grow and to expand, because it represented the sexual energy. If it's really what you want to achieve, it was about money or abundance, it could be with the turtle for the Mayans, the crocodile for the Nahuatl-speaking cultures. Love, it's about the hummingbird. If you want to manifest a piece of art on that, it will be like the monkey. So there are many, many different archetypes. And if you see... Because it could, it for some people it may sound primitive, but if you see all these archetypes are in branding, in many of the brands that we see around, or they have horses, or they have camels, or they have eagles, and even the names of the cars and Jaguar and Cougar and that, because we react to that, so that's why it's using branding.
But I think that's very powerful. So you call on these animals and you dream them, and then if they appear in the dream, you have that power to help you manifest, right?
Yeah. I have been doing this about dreaming for many, many years and taught many, many thousands of people around the world. And many people say, okay, I dreamt it, and then I got it. Many people remember the dream, or some people don't remember the dream, but they realize that they dreamt it because they got the manifestation. Because actually, first you have to dream it, and then you live it.
But just to get a little more detail, what exactly is dreaming? You know, according to your tradition, it's here we fall asleep. It's basically people think they go unconscious, you know, their body gets rest, but that's not what it is. Dreaming is something else, right? What is happening in dreams?
Of course. I know that, unfortunately, modern culture has like minimized the importance of dreaming. So for almost all the people, a very, very good night would be to sleep 8 hours in a row and not remembering anything and to feel refreshed next morning. But of course, we need that kind of unconscious sleeping to repair the body. But that part, mainly the unconscious type of dreams, happen in the first half of the night, of the time that you sleep. But then, when you're crossing like the second half, then it will begin coming like dreams, like we know them, and it's when you are creating your life. Unfortunately, that's why many people don't remember the dreams, because you had already lost your consciousness in the first half of the night. Mm. And for the ancient tradition, for example, there were like 13 heavens. 13 heavens were like, we can say, or 13 dimensions or 13 steps that the first energy gives to be transformed into matter. So the first energy was called Senteotl, or the first energy that is a complete black energy, like in the Bible, that is said, from the darkness came the light, and in many traditions, from which everything comes. So if you go step by step, the seventh heaven is called the white heaven or heaven of the moon, would be where dreams happen. And our reality matter will be in the 14th step, that is not a heaven anymore. So actually, that's why dreams create our reality, because they are halfway between the first energy that is still nothing, and it's an energetic reality that is not still matter, that is exactly halfway between the first energy and matter. So first must happen there, and then it will get more dense to become matter in a 14th step that will be this world that we live.
Oh, so that's why. So the dream reality is halfway between the immaterial and the material. That's why it feels real still, right?
Yeah. And actually, it's just a projection of your mind and of the collective mind. But actually, when you're a very good dreamer, it has, and in a dream, for example, if you touch something, it can be as real as this. Things smell, things taste, but they are in an energetic world, but are exactly half of the way between the first energy or God, if you want to call it like that, and this reality. That's why it was so important for the ancient cultures. And every ancient culture developed the knowledge about dreaming. The important ones.
The Aborigines call their religion the Dreamtime religion, you know?
So. Yeah. And actually, in the ancient Mexico, because dream is called Nahualism, because the Nahual, the word, comes from a Nahuatl word that means Newa, that means I. So actually, your dream body will be, instead of calling your physical body I, you would call your energetic body for dreaming I. So imagine the difference in how was the perception of the old culture of Mexico, because this physical body would be called the one that you are with the sun. That if you see the one that you are with the sunlight is a lot less important than I. So the word I was reserved for the energetic body that you use while dreaming. So it was the real you. And Nahualism was taught only in the old Mexico for warriors, the Tlamacasquis that were like the priests and the rulers, the people of the power, because if the one that controls the dream controls the power. So it's amazing. And it's a complete science of knowing you, of how to create through the dreams, how to enter in the collective. So it's a huge body of knowledge.
I see. But anyway, but you also said, I want to ask you about how to become lucid, but you said there's also the dreaming body that takes over. There's actually, you know, a body that is what we are, right? It's a physical, energetic body, or maybe not physical, but energetic. You call that the Nahual body, right? Is there something like that?
Yeah, because, for example, if I am in my bed sleeping and I am seeing a dream and I appear in that dream in my shape or in other one, the energetic body that appears there is called the Nahual, because my physical body is still lying in my bed and with the closed eyes. But all the action and everything that is happening in the dream is being experienced by this energetic body that the ancient ones called the Nahual.
And your physical body is called the Tonal body, right? Is that it?
It's called Tonacayo. That means exactly like the who you are with the sunlight, something like that. Tonal is a little bit more like your mind, who you think you are with the sunlight. That, of course, why the sunlight? Because in the ancient time there wasn't electricity. So, for example, we weren't supposed to be doing a radio show at this time. We were supposed to be sleeping. So, no, it's true. So it was referred the one that you were with the sunlight, it would be the one that you are awake. So, for example, with the sunlight, I have like a personality. So my physical body would be the one that I think that I am with the sunlight, and my tonal would be my personality, that I would think that I am Sergio, that I have certain age, that I am in New York doing this radio show with you, very happy, and that. But that it would be like the one that I am with awake, but actually the word I was reserved for the one that experienced the dreams and that, because he's really the one that is closer to the first energy and the one that is creating your tonal, your waking state.
So the dream body creates the waking body, really?
Yeah, in a more, with at least four times the power of the waking state. That's why if you make changes in your dreaming state, they happen a lot quicker than in your... that if you do it from the waking state. Of course, also the waking state feeds the dream, because, for example, if I every day I am fishing, eventually I will dream that I fish. But that you fish the first time was created in your dream before that you did it. So they do feed each other. But the one that is more important is what you dream.
So do you have a lot of experience dreaming consciously and being really aware in your dreams? It's like a daily practice for you?
Not daily, because I have been practicing like for 17 years this about dream. In the beginning, you try to do it every day and that. But of course, I always work with other author of my same publishing house, that he is also in lucid dreaming, and we say, if someone tells you, I am connected every day and I am lucid every day, is cheating you, because it's quite impossible. Because it depends of the energy. For example, if you are exhausted, then you will black out. You don't have enough energy to be lucid. But, for example, to have a good average is at least to have a very good dream recall of everything that happened at least twice or three times a week. And I try to have a complete, that I call my date with my Nahual, one night every week of complete lucidity, in which I induce it with a technique in which you are slowing the heart, I'm feeling how you begin feeling heavy, then stiff, then your temperature is dropping and you feel cold, and then you are in dream paralysis, and then you hear even yourself snore without losing consciousness, and then you begin constructing dreams. And so I at least try to have my date with my Nahual, that is once a week, of complete lucidity. But sometimes, of course, I give the opportunity to my body to black out and to recover.
Well, you know, that's the place I get lost. I can go follow my mind back, and then I can sometimes hear my body breathing, and then I don't go deep enough. I wake up when I have to go beyond that step to get into lucidity of the dreaming, right?
Yeah, many people live like what you live and get scared, or even the breathing, or get excited that I'm sleeping, and they wake up. That is like the next challenge, to learn how to manage through that state in which you hear clearly that you have that different breathing in which you are sleeping, and keep on. And then if you know the alphabet of dreams, then you can begin constructing and say, okay, a crocodile, and I would like to have more students, pam, pam, pam. And eventually in the beginning you are like imagining, but you are sleeping, and constructing your life with that, and then they will begin mixing with the ones that your Nahual or unconscious sense, and then you can create, and you have an amazing experience. But you are almost in the border, Alan, in being able to remain sleeping in that after that state. That actually there are certain postures of if you... Sorry. Okay. If you sleep in
postures,
your...
Sorry? Tell me the postures that can help.
A very good posture to keep doing that would be... to be on your side, pressing your left lung, And then the noise that you are creating through breathing, it would be even more dramatic. But you will be, and then you will be sure that you are sleeping, and then you will enter in lucidity.
Let me just get that. So I'm laying on my left side, and
yeah.
And what happens? What do I do next?
All this process, because after you see the change of breathing, like you're making a certain, you're pressing the left lung, so the noise that you are creating is even more dramatic, and then you get really sure that you are sleeping, but you didn't lose consciousness, and then you begin creating dreams and that, or looking at what comes, because actually lucid is just to be aware that you're dreaming while you're dreaming. So in that point you will be aware of that, but the next thing is to be doing things useful with that. That, for example, is to there are many things that you can do, like for example crossing walls. Because it's very good to destroy the concepts that you have of things solid, and to make changes in your life, or to fly. But for example, when we fly, we try to go and visit the spirit of the moon, and that can give you favors, or the spirit of the sun that will take you to your greatest destiny. So there are many, many different things that you can do when you are in that state.
I usually go to sleep laying on my back with my feet together and try to stay as conscious as I can when my body falls asleep. Does that work, or it's better to lay on my left side, you're saying, to make it more?
If you want, for example, I normally lie down in my back the normal days. The day that I do two different appointments with my Nahual. One that is lying down in the right side when I want to enter into the place where there is no dreams, that is like meditation, sleeping. And so that's one night, and then that I do 1 week, and then the next week I lie down in my left side, the one that I want to be into lucid dreaming. But that's depending what you want. But for example, nights that I am only planting, like tonight I will dream with the serpent. Tonight that serpent will heal my stomach. Tonight I will dream with this and that. It can be lying down in the posture that you're more comfortable.
But the big question I guess I have to ask you is this dream world that we enter with the snakes and the serpent is, and maybe it's a silly question, but is it a real world made of something outside of ourselves, or is it some parts of ourselves? What is the dream world that we are traveling in? Where does it exist?
Like I told you, it is like the seventh step between the first energy and that, and it's an energetic world. Of course,
it is actually a world. It's a real world. It's a world.
Yeah, a world done of energy. Of course, like an hologram. Of course, it's completely real, but it has. There are even what is called the pyramid of dreams. So the four first levels happen in your own mind. If you are able to cross from the fifth level to the ninth, then it goes to the collective. And then you are like in the, because actually your mind is like this world, because your life is real. Okay, if we want to call it real. But it's happening in a collective grid. That includes all of us and includes the earth and that. That's exactly in dreams. So for the first four levels are in your mind. Then after the fifth, you begin entering in the collective dream. And actually the ninth level of the pyramid of dreams is the place that there is no dreams, that it would be the complete darkness, dazzling darkness, that is like to be in a meditation sleeping, that if you are lucid, meditating there without projecting with your mind, that, for example, for the Buddhists, 1 minute there, it counts like a retreat of 7 days.
Oh, wow. Have you been there to this place of total darkness?
Yeah, for example, that's what I was telling you. One, in my date with Mainawal, 1 week, I go to the place without no dreams, and that's lying in your right side. And the next week, I do it to the place with dreams to create my life, lying in my left side.
I see. Alternate. You go there. Oh, I see. I didn't realize you actually went there. And so in this, but you were also saying today, I was talking to you, this time now we're moving into the sixth sun, it will be easier for people to reach the Nagual body, right? Because of the energies of the sun.
Yeah, actually, first of all, people will be getting like the information that is important. Because first you must, because it takes some effort to get there, so most you must see the value. And now there are many, many different traditions that are opening their dreaming knowledge, like some lineages of the Mexican one. The dream yoga is beginning to be taught, because almost everyone thought that Buddhism was only about meditation and ceremonies and that, but now the cherry of the cake is the dream yoga in Kabbalah. So people is beginning to explore, and of course it would be something that will become more common and common and common while this sixth sun, because this is a sixth sun of the inside. And one of the main things that we have to look is our dreams, because it's ourselves without mind. So in the dreams, you see the real you. You see what you are creating, not saying I have to be kind and whatever. You see the real one, and then you can begin doing deep, deep transformations of yourself.
Can you meet other people? Have you met other people that you've known, and other people maybe you haven't known in your dreams? Have you done that?
Yeah. For example, I have met people that I didn't know before, and that they appear in my dreams, and then they become friends or something. But
wow.
I teach long programs of dreaming. For example, now I'm doing one in London, and normally the first ones were in Mexico, but now I'm doing one in London and other one in Italy. And it's a long year program in which everyone learns everything. And then at the end, you have like a small group of 6-7 people that we agree to meet each other in the dream time every full moon. And of course, the secret of this is just to agree to see themselves. So you will see the ones that really got lucid, the others you won't see them, and to be giving like similar details of what happened without telling anyone anything. And for my students, we got that group every full moon, and we meet each other in Dreamland or in the seventh heaven. And then, for example, you give details that, because the only thing that we see is we will see each other there, and then that there is a common purpose for that, because it's with the intention of having a ceremony, for example. So for the healing of the planet or whatever. And then you say, and then the people begin saying, and a white dog appeared, and it was raining and whatever. And then you see so many synchronicities that you see that is beyond the mind. So it's amazing.
Right. I think it's fascinating. I was hoping my friend Barbara would join us, but I guess she couldn't make it, because she has also this Conscious Dying Institute in Connecticut. And you mentioned something today about, and in a way, dreams are related to this idea of conscious dying, right? Talk about what you're teaching as far, what's the difference between the dreaming and people conscious dying, and that whole experience. What's the similarity there?
Of course. Actually, in the Nahuatl language, temictli means dream, but also means the one that died, the one that passed away. So it's giving you a clear relationship between dreams and death. So that's why it's very important for many traditions.
But what is the relationship? What is that relationship?
In the language, is clear, no? That is, they use like the same word to say dream, that to say the one that passed away or dies. But in this knowledge, it is said that dying would be very similar to dreaming. So that in the moment that you die, you will enter in this energetic reality that will be really similar, that will have a lot of projections of your mind, in which, for example, you can, if you want to see your grandmother, it will appear, or Jesus Christ, or Buddha, or whatever. And normally people will lose, like, the consciousness there, and then you will eventually have to come back. And that's why practicing lucidity is so important, because if you are able to recognize many times while you are dreaming that you are dreaming, then you have a lot of more possibilities to recognize that you are dead when you are dead. And then you will have like a chance of not coming back or going to different destinies. So there are many different traditions that are teaching like conscious death. For example, in mine, we teach like the four exits that the ancient Mexicans have. Like if you, like your ijiyotl or life essence exits from the liver, then you will become again human. If you exit from the chest, then you have the opportunity of melting with the sun and becoming like light. That is like the end of your personal path, but you become part of this major star, our sun. And if you exit from the forehead, then you can become a stardust. Or if you exit from the crown, is Nahual, that you will have like an energetic body that can come, go, back, and forward. And then the art of conscious death is really to be practicing the death that you want, because there are certain steps. What is going to happen first? What is going to happen next? And that, for example, I practice my death every 20 days. In which I am
every 20. What does that mean?
Like actually, for example, it's like begin the same technique that enter in lucidity. That is, slow the heart, feel heavy, cold. Like this is a process like dying, and then when you are falling like kind of asleep, that it will be like very similar to death. I visualize like the recreate, like how my body will exit from the chest, what it will be the dream that I will have, that I always put that my nanny Rosita, my grandmother, and my dog will receive me, like that. So you are like making exactly the steps, what is going to happen next, and how I'm going, because I'm choosing to exit for the moment, for the chest, and how I will finish melting with the sun. So actually, that gives me a lot of much more probabilities, because I am doing it since I am very young, and I have been doing it. Like, if I see in one dream that is my grandmother, my nanny, and my dog, that I am death, and to recognize I am death. And if that happens, so I have a lot of opportunities that really finish not coming back here again, that really finish in the sun.
But when someone dies, does their Nahual body remain? Is that what's happening in most cases? And then they come back again?
We have like five bodies. The Tonacayo, that is the physical body, then other one that is called Ijiyotl, that is the life essence. Then you have three other ones, that is Tonal, that is the mind, Nahual, that is the energetic body that of sleeping that and also dying. Another one that is called Tejolia, that is kind of the soul. So when you die, you lose two, the Tonakaya, the physical body, and the life essence. The other three remain. So they will go to the, in a normal death, you will lose consciousness, and then the Tonal, because there you won't be awake again, will become mind, and it will be splitted from the Nahual and the Tejolia. And that, so the personality will remain in the, in if we can say it, in the land of the death. That's why you can always call the ancestors, and they are always there. And then the Nahual and the Tejolia could incarnate. So you can have, even that they are split, that personality remains. That would be like a very similar concept of karma of the Eastern traditions, because that personality still affects the one that came back. And that's why you repeat certain patterns.
I was saying the best way for people to leave is through the chest, you're saying? Through their chest?
No. That's a very personal election. That's the one. That's why to talk about conscious death is like a very deep thing, and it's like to personally analyze if you would like to come, because there is nothing wrong with being human, coming out from the liver or the chest or the forehead. All of them have advantages, disadvantages. And of course, for example, for me now, the one that I am choosing, like in the moment of my life that I am, and in the one that I have been choosing for certain years, is the chest. But it doesn't mean that I can that I cannot change of opinion. So probably in 10 years I will change of opinion and decide that I would prefer to go back from the go out from the forehead or from the crown. For the moment, the one that I am choosing is the chest, but it's not better or less. It's different.
Oh. My friend Barbara has a question. She says she asked me to ask you, what is it about going out to through the liver? What does that mean? What is that
through the liver? It's becoming human, but. It means that you had a death without consciousness. So,
okay.
For example, and it was quite mathematic. For example, in the Mexican calendar now, I am 8 lizards. So if I die from the liver, that is the most common death. Because what does that mean? Because for us, the death is a force that is trying to enter in your body since the moment that you are born. So it's a constant energy that when she's able, or he, or whatever you want to call it, to make a hole in your navel, will enter and will take your life force. And the exit of the life force will depend your destiny. So if you don't train yourself, nothing and that, then the immediate exit to go out will be the liver. That is the closest one to the navel. And then you will come back like a human, that it would be like traumatized, if you want to say it in words that people know a little bit more. So, for example, if I know that now I am 8 lizards in the calendar, the next time I will be 9 serpents, that is the next one, that it would be a very difficult life, because 9 serpents would be without any money and that. So. Because you even can know characteristics, because you will go around the wheel. But if you go, if you're practicing to go through the chest, then you will finish melting in the sun. Or if you go from the forehead, it's like the Pleiades or Sirius are like the destiny, and you can become what people call like light beings. And also, if you go from the crown, it will be Nahual that also. But if you go from the crown, you can come back as a human if you wish, but in the human that you want and where you want. Not if you come from the liver, you will be automatically delivered because you lost consciousness.
You know, I think my last lifetime I went out through the crown. I seem to have a flashback of that, you know? I'm not sure. But then if you go out through the crown, which is maybe, well, you're saying going out through the third eye, you dissolve and get off your karmic wheel. But you go out through the crown, you have a choice, you're saying, of what you want to do, right?
Yeah. And actually, that's why now I'm touring with my friend Charlie, that he practices Tibetan Buddhism, because we find many similarities. Of course, differences that make unique the traditions, but there are similarities. And that's why we think that it's like a common source.
So this common source, of course, is the science of the human being. I mean, what it really is to be, you know, the how incarnation works is the source. So the Tibetans don't make the same distinctions, right? They don't talk about going through different, or do they talk about going out through different areas of the body?
Yeah, I think they have even more. They have like the seven exits. We only have four.
Oh, you only have four. The four is the navel or the liver, the chest.
No, the navel is the death force will enter from there. So we have liver, we have chest, we have forehead, and we have crown.
Oh, I see. So people practice this, and then when they're conscious, then they can choose what to do, you know, that's because are they entering another world? I mean, what's the difference when you're in your Nagua body, when you're dreaming, and then let's say you're in your Nagua body when people are dead? What is there a difference in that world?
It won't be very, very different. The difference, it will be that when you are dreaming, something will take you back here, that is that you will be awake. In the other way, nothing is going to take you back here because you won't be awake never. So that's the thing, because actually if you see in dreams there is no time, so you can be suspended there forever. So you have the or your mind at least. So you have like the choice of only if something is like that is that someone that has the intention of awaking you goes to that area and tells you that you are death, or that you get out the awareness that you are death. That could take in a place where no time you cannot know how long it's going to take.
But what's the purpose of being in this world? Why are people in the sun body, the tonal, the physical body? Why do we come here? What's the purpose of being in this world?
Oh, that's quite a tough question. I think honestly, like the experience, because the experience because I have heard many things that to be able to experience in a physical body and to experience this wonderful world and that, but when you have been like a lucid dreamer for a long time and the things could be experienced exactly like the same, even the tastes are like better and that, then sometimes I have the same question. It cannot be the one that everyone says, like, to have the beautiful experience of being in a material body, because actually it's not material, it's just like it pretends to be material. And actually in the dream world you can experience these things with the same intensity. So it's something that many times I keep questioning myself, Alan, to be honest.
But yeah, I understand. Maybe nobody has the answer, but you're here for a specific purpose, it seems like, right? You know what you're here to do.
Yeah, actually, I think once you are here, then that I don't know the reason why we chose to come here, but once you are here, I think the purpose is to learn how to die consciously to go back there.
No, but we're also here to do... But besides that, I think, I mean, just my opinion, I think we're here to achieve something, to do something to the world itself, to...
We are here to achieve knowledge and experiences.
Right.
And actually, I always have a question with myself, like, uh-huh. at least my personal world, not the entire world, but I always question myself. Do you think if you die now, you left it better than how before you came? And that's for me an important question. If I think that my surroundings, my person, the things that I could do are in a certain way better than when I came in this life.
I think you have already, Sergio. I think you've already left it better. You know, you're giving people hope and, you know, positive feeling. So I think your work seems very, it's big. It talks about changing actually the way we look at reality, you know, because we think this world is real, and you're telling us there's this other world that's even bigger than this world. And I think that's, you know, you're a messenger of the sixth sun, it seems to me.
Oh, thank you so much, Alan. That's what my teacher says, Hugo.
Oh, he says that to your teacher. Yeah, I think you're here for the people, and you're here to, you know, share your knowledge and learn more. And, you know, I think it's interesting times as we move into the sixth sun totally. I think lots of things will change. Don't you think so? Lots of possibilities.
Yeah, no, they are changing. And I think something really, really important is to try to be happy and to have a good time while the thing changes, not to take it so, so serious and so dramatic, because it creates a vibration. So we are in the do the best and be happy while it's happening, no?
Well, thank you for your time. And I know you have so much more that you're going to be putting out there, this last book, Caves of Power. I mean, I didn't really talk about the technique here on the radio because it's hard to see, but the video people can watch, I just did with Sergio, coming to my YouTube channel. And in the book, these exercises are outlined very specifically for different achieving certain possibilities, potentials, right? What are some of the things that the book talks about achieving, you know?
Healing, rejuvenation, manifestation, because
right.
I think it's a time to get our power back, to, like the exercise that we did for your YouTube channel, like to empower your blood, for example, to become your medicine. Amazing techniques that are quite practical about getting, and that's why it's called Caves of Power, what the power that is hidden inside of us, and begin changing and doing great things, and to get like the power and the responsibility of ourselves.
Yes, to change. Yeah, there's a really great exercise you talk about, the serpent of blood, the blood serpent, where you change your blood to heal the body, because of course your blood is in every little part of your body, and if you can energize it, it can rejuvenate your whole, you know, embodiment there. So yeah, it's a very practical book, very practical. So I think you're going to be writing more books though, right? You said you will be?
Yeah, I think so, eventually. This one is quite new.
Well,
so it just came out like 2 months.
Oh, well, every time you write a book, I want to interview you about it, okay?
Thank you so much. You will be the first one, Alan, I promise.
Well, you know, maybe, hopefully. But thank you tonight. I mean, we could talk for hours and hours, I know. We could talk a long time. But I'll see you. Sergio's going to be at the Open Center in New York this Friday. That is January, what, 28th? Is it the 29th,
yeah.
29th, Saturday. Saturday's Friday. Friday the 28th.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Yeah.
Oh, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, January 27th, 28th, 29th, 2017, in case you're listening to this in an archive. If not, you can go to Sergio's website, SergioMagana.com. And thank you. Thanks, Sergio.
Thank you so much, Alan. And see you on Friday. And thank you to everyone that was with us thinking about dreams, if this is a dream or what. So all the seekers that follow your wonderful channel and program.
Mm-hmm. We're dreaming now, aren't we?
Yeah, this is the dream of the dream.
The tonal is the dream of the Nagual, huh?
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk more. Thanks, Sergio. Have a great
night.
Thank
you so much, Alan. Such a pleasure.
Okay.
And see you on Friday.
Yeah. Okay, great. Talk to you soon.